played.
Just
But I
kidding.
remember thinking this format was bad, so I'm interested in talking about it because I think we disagree seemingly.
I only remember two cities. I remember playing Mega Mewtwo and I remember playing Gallade.
Because the supporter pool was really weak. And that's why I think the format isn't very good. You have there's the Giovanni that can plus power or draw five. Mm-hmm. And like decks were playing Birch.
Yep.
And I believe. There was no any form of disruption.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I just found my Mega Mewtwo list and it runs one Birch's observation. And I'm like, all right.
Yeah, I remember thinking
it's
that deck
was a stressful time.
But I was poor and like didn't buy cards, so I never played it. But I remember thinking it was quite good in this format. I think it was maybe the best deck.
What deck?
Mega Mewtwo, just the damage swap. It played... there were a couple different colors you could play with it. Couldn't you play some options in it, I think? I don't remember.
Yeah, I like have a list that is the damage swap one, but the one I'm actually going to play is not damage swap.
I seem to remember maybe Yveltal was involved, maybe just because it could trade with Night Marchers.
Yeah, exactly. So the list that I have is like a 4-3 Mewtwo, a 3 baby Yveltal, and a 2-2 Zoroark Klein.
Zoroark, yeah.
But that's part of the reason.
I wish I could remember what the card, like how the card pool changed from there to like NAIC and World, or you know, Nats and World.
Well, so the set right between Cities and States was huge. That was the
Puzzle Break set, wasn't it? The States set.
It was what?
The Puzzle of Time set. Yeah,
Puzzle of Time, Greninja Break.
Like what was weird was the regionals after it were all expanded. So like all people were doing was like working on expanded decks, working on expanded decks. So there was like this kind of gap.
Yep.
Where like nothing kind of happened, and then it was Nats, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And I just don't know the sets well enough to be able to like look back at like the lists that were good at Nats and be like, you know, did something actually change here, or did we just realize what was good?
It didn't change all that much because the YZG deck got worse and worse over time, but it was like still a very good deck kind of from, cause it popped up at Cities, I suppose. But then like, I remember Kevin Baxter, top 32 Nats, or like it was still a deck at by Nationals, almost card for card what was played at Cities, and it was one of those decks that just sort of like 50-50'd everything. But obviously when you had one tricked it for a whole season, you kind of knew some ins and outs. But I'm trying to think of what I remember. I know because Waterbox shows up by Nationals, I believe it comes onto the scene after winning, I want to say Germany. Or doing, maybe it doesn't win Germany, but it top eights or something. It pops up at a European Nationals back when those were still a thing. But I don't remember if it had new cards or if it was just a concept that could have existed and then popped out of thin air at a tournament. Yeah. Did Max, when did Max, what set is Max Elixir from? Because that card was very relevant for the Darkrai decks that were played at Nationals that year too.
Let's see. Max Elixir was Breakpoint. And Breakpoint was the Greninja Break set, so I think that was the state set.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah.
So that came right after, right?
So then, what comes out at Nats then? I don't remember. It was a lot of the same stuff was good. Like Trevenant was good.
Night March.
Yeah, I think Trevenant Break may have come out in one of those two sets.
Yeah, I remember I didn't do well at State. That was like the first year, I think maybe almost the entire time I've been playing, that I like didn't get a States trophy. I like made top 16 twice with, I think I played YZG.
Let's see, Greek. Fates Collide was the Nat set. And so that set was not very good, I don't think.
Yeah, that sounds right to me. Doesn't that just have like Glaceon I think.
Yeah, Glaceon, Jolteon, Mew. Oh, not even Jolteon, right? Because Jolteon was like one of those.
Jolteon was a Generations promo. Yeah. It was in a special box.
Mew, Fates Collide. Zygarde X, yep, I remember that one.
Yeah, those sets were all the break sets were pretty weak because the breaks were so terrible, other than Greninja kind of Zoroark.
Dude, Zygarde EX was like ruined me because there was that Zygarde Vileplume deck that did well in Japan, and we spent tons of time working on that.
The deck was so bad. I remember
Liam played it at Worlds and we got
Yeah,
I remember destroyed. Alex Hill and the Poliswag guys. I think that was their Nats deck. I don't remember. They had something kind of spicy about it.
Yeah,
I'm that's what it was. But yeah, the deck obviously not all that great.
So why was Vileplume Vespiquen? Like, I feel like the Vileplume Vespiquen build that did well at U.S. Nats was like different in some fundamental way than Andrew's Cities build, but like. I assume that it requires knowledge of the sets, and I don't know. Is the answer Puzzle of Time?
It was Revitalizer, wasn't it? Revitalizer comes out in the Generations set too, and that ends up being a big card for that deck. I think that was one of the bigger shifts in the way that Vespiquen Vileplume was built. I think both versions, Andrew Wamble's kind of initial one that I think he builds at the Chicago Marathon that year, was very solitary. You know, solitaire, just draw heavy focus. But I think the ones with Revitalizer is really when people figured out battle compressors and things like that. And I naturally you'd be playing battle compressors with a Vespiquen deck already, but in terms of like how it would go on to be built with things like Lurantis Vileplume and decks like that, I think that's sort of when the engine gets figured out with, because I think you played the draw unknowns too, and all these other just kind of little pieces. But I think Revitalizer was the biggest card.
Dude, I have super fond memories of Lurantis Vileplume because that was like you gave us like kind of a halfway done list, and then I think we were some of the people that like maxed battle compressors and maxed revitalizers, and then passed it back to you, and then Ross Coffin ended up like going really far with it. And then did Azul also like win the tournament?
Azul won a regionals with it, I believe.
Yeah.
So there was like a whole bunch of us that were on Lurantis Vileplume really early with this like battle compressor revitalizer engine.
Mm-hmm. I worked a really long time on just Lurantis and Standard, and it was almost good enough. I played it for a couple league challenges, I think.
Almost.
Yeah, Lurantis was like so quickly power crept out though. Like it was good for like that one or two expanded regionals, and then the next set comes out and it's terrible.
It never struck me as being good. To me, anytime I never played any tournaments where it did well either, but anytime I saw it, it was just like, ah, man, Vileplume's just that good and expanded. None of Lurantis' attacks are.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, Lurantis was just the best attacker that was also grass type. Like, I mean, there was just. A like 3 or 4 month window where it was like, what can I use Forth the Giant Plants with to like win this tournament?
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, Vileplume plus something that attacks.
Anything.
And then you turn one Vileplume him and you're like, wow, I won already. I mean, you know, I think every expanded deck, I mean, the motto of expanded is like, does your deck feel broken enough? If it doesn't, like you should go back to the drawing board, and like turn one Vilepluming was always broken enough, right? Mm-hmm. Like you never felt like, oh yeah, we're not gonna win this if you turn one Vileplume the guy,
mm-hmm.
because it's just like the most horrible thing you can do to someone. All right. Is there more stuff that we should say about that? We should just jam all this conversation. Is there more stuff we want to say about that cities? So here's my question about the cities. Two, a comment and a question. First. I seem to recollect, like, the thing I loved about YZG was I always wanted Zoroark Break to have more, or to have, like, a better place in the meta. Like, I was like, that should be a good card. So I was happy to see it have a brief moment where it seemed like it was a good card. But it seemed like, was that deck really only good because it beat Nightmarch?
I don't think it was. That's definitely not the only reason. I think probably a good part of it is kind of what Britt said about the supporters, right? Like you were able to play a Maxi, which is like a pretty strong supporter, into Gallade, at least comparatively to the options that we had. So you played Junipers, you played Maxis, and you got to play Lysandre and not a lot of other. Actually, if you look, like I was looking through a lot of lists, and a lot of decks played a Maxi Gallade engine, probably just because what else were they going to do?
Right. You're like, why not do this thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was always kind of common. I don't remember at what point in time, but at least it was something I've done in my own deck building before. It's like, I'm playing Battle Compressor already. I've got double colorless. I mean, maybe even sometimes you don't have the double colorless, but it was like, you already had it. Why not just play one of each? I definitely played actual tournaments with just one Gallade. Oh, I played it at expanded regionals once, and it was good, but just...
Dude, let me tell you, because I went back and looked at this. If you go back to Six Prizes articles written in 2016, Britt wrote an article about how he was playing YZG, but he was copying it. He played it at Kansas States, and he was playing a list ripped off of Azul's list that he used to win Connecticut, where he cut all the Maxis and Gallade stuff. And it was just four Sycamores, two Lysanders, and one Judge. And that was a Giovanni's. And that was his draw engine. And then he played like four Trainer's Males, four Versus Seekers, four Ultra Balls, like good times.
I did bad at that tournament. I remember I lost a winning end to Trevenant, Jay Young from St. Louis, if you happen to be listening. It wasn't a particularly memorable series. I like won the game where I didn't get Trevenant judged. And then like games one and three, I just got, it was just really disheartening. I'd had kind of a bad year. And like I had just said, States were always kind of my tournament. I always showed up at States, and I just like, you get the good matchup and the winning in, and then you just.
So the crazy thing is your tournament report from that. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly how it went down. You lost to like a Trevenant Hammers red card list. I don't think people
realize playing red cards and stuff.
Yeah. They're like red card.
I'm glad you sort of have the live fact checker going right now, because I talk a lot of the time. I've at least tweeted about it once or twice about how I have my memory is really, really, really good when it comes to Pokemon. I can remember games, specific rounds from tournament, you know, just random regionals. It'd be like, oh yeah, round six, I played so-and-so. They're from New Jersey. They went first. Things like that. But then at the same time, I just like, I don't think I've brushed my teeth today. I forgot to take my medicine this morning. Like I forget. I'm holding my phone while I'm looking for it. I do all sorts of kind of spacey stuff like that. But when it comes to Pokemon, I've got the memory for it. I've wondered
that's
too.
That's like a chess kind of skill, right? Like the game memory is a thing.
I've wondered, I don't know if either of you saw, I guess going on this tangent now, but I think it came out last fall, but there was this, I think it was in a Stanford study, but people who know Pokemon, there's a particular part of the brain that's dedicated to remembering just the silhouettes. I've wondered if they're related at all, but I think that's kind of a cool fact too, just about us Pokemon dweebs. Like it doesn't seem like we really pay that much attention, because so many Pokemon are never good. Like there's lots of Pokemon that might be a cool Pokemon, but they've never had a good card. So as those of us who are kind of experienced the game almost primarily through the card games and not the video games, it's always strange to me how I know the names of Pokemons that I've never seen before, but just because I know they had a bad card, even it's curious. Right. So how easy it is to remember just once you have the kind of foundations of Pokemon, I guess, built in.
Oh, yeah, it's funny. Obviously, I've been watching all the tweets roll in this morning about the Pokemon 25th anniversary celebration stuff. And I think it was Raul was like tweeting about how basically his entire salary is going to go into like buying tchotchkes or whatever this year. And yeah, like for us, it's mostly competitive-ish stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. Certainly we've got some like stuff. Looking around the room. We got a bunch of stuff. There's a Wailord right behind me. But, it's like 3 feet long and plushy. What's that like? But yeah, less. I think my kids are pretty good at the silhouette thing, but I'm terrible at it. I have absolutely no idea. What was the other? This tells you something about the state's meta. So when I went back and looked at your tournament report, Britt, you went 2-1 against Night March and you went 3-1 against Trevenant, and that was the whole tournament. Seven rounds, top 16.
Sounds about right. I didn't play at all. I didn't have any of these cards, so I'm sure my play was pretty lackluster. Like, I was just, that was just the bad year for me. I just, like, I was the tournament I, like, had to get, like, picked up from because I had a panic attack the night before and just, like, didn't play. Like, I just kind of, I, like, showed up to Nationals and, like, dropped it 1-3 or something like that. Then I did okay at Worlds, which is a good story. But yeah, I was just like kind of out of it that year.
And
you
played Waterbox at Worlds, right?
I played it at Nationals too. But yeah, that was, I had a good tear with Waterbox somehow.
The Waterbox was a good deck. That was the Russell Lepar pushing deck.
The night matchup really was a toss up, and any time I mentioned that Worlds format, people are probably right to suggest that like my night march matchup like wasn't favorable, but you know, if there was ever, I think, you know, that I thought I was going to win that tournament, being completely honest. I think I could have beaten the Mega Audino deck. Like, it was one of, I think I would have just like tangentially been really, really good against it. Like, I was playing like lots of energy removal, and naturally Quaking Punch would have really slowed down the Spirit Links. But like, I lost round one, day one, to a Japanese Night March player that had a Shrine, the stadium that let, and so he had Garvantula, and he had like a Garvantula that resisted me that could Night March. And so I lost to him round one, and then I won 6 in a row, and then I start out 4-0 day two, and like all of my ties were, I tied Keon in game 3 where I would have won. Like, I had just locked it up, not enough time to do anything about it, like not even like an extra turn, but like the game I had just won against Night March, which was really hard to do. Like, he stayed asleep on Articuno, I Xerosic'd an energy, like time was called. And then the kind of random from Wisconsin who got second with Greninja, I lost to him on stream again going into game 3. He just like got a versus Seeker off my into 2 or into 1. Anyways, long tangent. I liked Waterbox a lot. That was
the year that Ross played like the weird Veltal deck, right?
Yeah, we played. Yeah, we played best.
You were on that too, right?
Yeah.
How'd you do?
I went 5-0-3 day one, so I made it through day one, and then day two I played Azul round one and I beat him, and then it kind of went mediocre from there. I ended up, like, I played against a Volcanion deck, a Japanese Volcanion deck, which wasn't even a real deck, and just got destroyed.
I got some of them in day two.
Yeah. Like, I think I played against a metal deck, like a Bronzong deck, which was just a really bad matchup. Like, the deck was designed almost solely to beat Night March, and I think I only ended up playing against 2 Night March. So it didn't go as well for me, but obviously Ross did really well. That deck was very bad. Like, it's not a good deck. It just happened to, you know, be good against the best deck, and it could, like, you know, it's okay against other stuff. It's not terrible, but like, it's a Vespacoon deck that I think played like 21 Pokemon. So you're never like one-shotting stuff.
Right. That's why I always felt like YZG, all these Aveltal decks, like, such a big part of their attraction during that like 6-month period was Oblivion Wings just really, really good against Night March.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, oh, I'm going to knock out his attacker and I'm going to be like setting up something else, mm-hmm, that will hopefully be better.
Yeah. My favorite play of like with that deck and just in general against Night March is like they would attack with the Mew from Fates Collide, and you'd have your unknown, and they'd have Dimension Valley out, and you'd go Muscle Band on your unknown and just knock them out for no energy. That was always really fun.
Didn't know unknown had an attack.
Yep, colorless and damage.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good attack.
It's like, it was like Hidden Power for 10 or something?
Yep, that's it.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't know that. That's like pretty high up there in terms of like, Can a random basic in my deck have a useful attack? Like, that's good. No, yeah. You know, that's sometimes in standard these days, you can win a game by sort of intelligently recognizing that your Mu with the bench barrier is going to set up some proper math. Just little things like that are always super relevant to be at least aware of.
Yeah. That's exactly what we were talking about a week ago, where like that idea of like you just have this, you know, diverse knowledge of situations and your utility of different Pokemon in your deck, and you're able to kind of piece together, you know, plays that the opponent doesn't see coming, right? I mean, they never saw the unknown attacking coming. They never thought I got to gust up this unknown and kill it.
Yeah.
we did super bad. We had the same strategy, but a much worse deck, because we played this like Zygarde Vileplume thing. And we were like, we're just going to beat Night March. And we beat all the Night March decks, but we only played two. And Liam got absolutely wrecked. But the best story I have from that world was they started like looking for Liam due to a decklist error. They said he had submitted multiple decklists. And it turned out that Liam had won Nets that year. And some other kid had turned in a list that said Liam Halliburton's deck across the top. And it was like the 60 he played at Nats. Yeah. I have no idea who that kid was, but we salute him every time.
That's hilarious.
That's hilarious. It is absolutely hilarious. Yeah. Whoever that kid is, he's a boss. All right. It's in my repertoire. Every single bar is hard. Spitting fire like I'm the human version of Charizard. Welcome to the Trash Lanch. As always, I'm Brent Halliburton here with Mike Boucher and Brent Privis. Attendance is 100%. We held off for 24 hours, and people have been asking on Twitter where their pod is. That's but I think they know the second I say 100% of attendance is important, they know what I'm talking about. So excited to give us a little extra time to pull together the best pod for people. Five-star review update. We got our 16th five-star review, but there was no review associated with it. You know, you got to leave a review, because people say leaving reviews is good, and also we read the reviews. But we appreciate the 16th reviewless review. It's a good one. Let's talk about what happened over the last week. Before we dive into talking about some decks, Mike, congratulations on second place.
Thank you. Yeah.
So what happened in the Pika ROM finals at the Sunday Open?
Our first two games were split in both like really bad games where each of us just drew very poorly. And then game three was pretty close. He won the first game. I won the second game. So in game three, he got to go second, which is always a big advantage. But it was a really close game. Ended up coming down to him tandem shocking my Mewtwo. I had about 20 cards left in my deck with three switch left, used research, ended NA, did not hit a switch. So therefore I lost the game. I don't think I would have won immediately on that turn, but I would have obviously lived another turn and had a good shot at winning. So just how it goes sometimes. But yeah, I played against a lot of Seniscorch during that tournament and I beat it a lot. But I will say playing against Tom Brophy, I played him in Swiss and then also in top four, and against him the matchup was very, very close. List has a little bit to do with it. I think playing a great catcher in Seniscorch makes the matchup a lot closer, but also he just plays the matchup much better than the average person. So the matchup still feels good for Pika in general, but against people that really know how to play Seniscorch, it's much, much, much closer. So I do want to get some more experience with that matchup against people that kind of know what they're doing.
Was there an approach he was taking that was different, or was he just having better turns?
So the game in Swiss, I think he ran really hot. He got to go second, and he got a turn to 280 with a gust effect on my tag team. So that was just nice. That was really bad. But then in top cut, I don't know. It's so weird. Like I have to go. I wish I could watch the games, because like as I was playing the games, I was trying to think about what he was doing differently than other people. And I still can't really pinpoint it. He plays his cards much more, if that makes sense. So like, I feel like a lot of people hold their scoop ups and their Jirachis and whatnot quite a lot in the matchup, and maybe just in general. And I feel like he was just playing all of them almost immediately. And maybe that's a little part of it. I think he recognizes how I'm going to try to take six prizes. And because like the cool thing about Pika is that there's so many ways to draw six prizes, whether you set up Tag Bolt or you're trying to kill two VMAXs. And so I think in a lot of matchups, but in that matchup in particular, it's a lot of trying to guess how your opponent is going to try and take their six prizes in the most efficient way possible and try to prevent that in the best way possible. So like one game, I remember trying to set up a Tag Bolt play and he did something to prevent me from doing that and it threw me off. And yeah, so I think that's a lot of it. It's really trying to think ahead of how is Pikaram going to try and take their map out their prizes and do everything you can to prevent that. Yeah.
Was Stefano's list any different than your list?
Whose list? Oh, the guy in the finals. He played an Incineroar GX over something else. And that might have been the only change. Maybe over the Big Charm. I forget. But yeah, he played Incineroar GX, which didn't come up in our matches at all.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. I definitely feel like when I see these like Lightning Mewtwo lists, I feel like they're getting closer and closer where like pretty soon the only difference will be, do you run speed energy or Aurora energy?
Right.
Like that is the difference in these two lists.
Right? Yeah, I played against a Mewtwo Lightning deck in one of the recent tournaments that ran four Crushing Hammer. I was like, all right, so this is like...
That's I thought you cut the four Crushing Hammer for four Pokemon and like that's what the Delta is right now. Right.
I was like, how did you fit all of this?
Yeah, that's crazy. So Centiscorch Still Valley was like, I think as Britt appropriately identified, kind of the prevailing new meme of decks of choice. Did either of you guys play some games against that this past week?
Some of the Centiscorch games that I played against were against the Still Valley version. It seems fine. So I can't really speak to say how it is in general. I can tell you the Pikaram matchup is pretty much the same. I mean, I can't stamp them to one, but again, so kind of going back to the matchup, one other thing that Brophy did really well is he made it so that I pretty much could never stamp him to one. He made it so at like a minimum stamp to two. Usually though, he would just kill a tag team and then look to kill another tag team. So it's usually just stamped at three. So maybe if you just play it well, that's not really a big deal. Otherwise, I didn't really feel a difference in the matchup.
Britt, have you fooled around with Centiscorch Still Valley at all?
I did. I have. It's actually what I won. So I mentioned it last time. I had some team challenges over the weekend and I was going to play in two, but I won the one I played in on Saturday. And I played Centiscorch Still Valley for it. And I don't pretend to know. I don't consider myself a Centiscorch player. So I'm probably lacking a handful of facts that the little Twitter inner circle of Centiscorch players seems to have access to. So I don't pretend to know all the nuances of the matchups, but I really liked it. I've mentioned it before on the podcast that I've felt Centiscorch is clunky at times and that I thought, or at least preferred, the Mewtwo Welder deck because I thought it could dig more aggressively for Welder. And I just generally thought that's why I thought it might be better and certainly why I liked it more. And the Savali version kind of assuages that concern. You do get to dig a little harder, not just for Welders. You're resilient against reset stamps, as we've said, but also for things like switches and all the little ways that Pikaram and things like that can beat you. You just have a little more draw power to thwart those strategies or what have you. I like it a lot. I haven't really played this week. Just kind of been getting ready for school, working on my stuff. So I haven't played it all this week, but I plan to maybe own in on it a little bit as we're getting closer to the Players Cup 3 starting. I'm not sure when we'll talk about it that again, so I'll probably try to keep some of my preparation for that for when we're on topic about it. But I think it has a lot of power going forward. I would like to know what the head-to-head between the Cash Brophy iteration of Centiscorch, I would like to see how they do against each other. If I guess it's maybe just 50-50 still. I actually played against a lot of like three Centiscorch decks in the team challenge. So I guess I have some experience playing the mirror, but I'm not at the level of these players who have been winning Hegsters and placing very well with Senna Scorcher over the past week or just in general too. But I would think it's probably just 50-50, whoever goes first. And if you get the Volcanion, probably just decides the matchup more often than not. But I think if you stabilize, I don't know. It just felt really, really good. I loved having all the extra Pokemon draw. It just felt smooth to me. And I've just never liked Jirachi in these fire decks. I can't speak on like when it saw play on like ADP and Pikaron. That was a little kind of formats ago, a little bit before I started getting back into it. But I just have never really liked the way Jirachi feels in Blacephalon or in Centiscorch. It's a huge package. You play the nets and stuff too, and it feels like you just burn all your switch trying to dig for welders or trying to dig for your fire crystals, and it's just easier to do that without committing as much with the Savali, I think. But naturally, it's an evolution. Your hand sizes do get big sometimes with lots and lots of welders, lots and lots of giant hearths. So sometimes Savali isn't drawing any cards. So I want to toy around with a lower line for sure and see how that feels, 2-1 or even 1-1. And then on the same token, I'm kind of curious now about just Savali's place in other decks. Are there any other standard archetypes that maybe have a good reason to play the card? It's obviously like Octillery. These cards are super duper good and has enough HP that as long as ADP isn't around, like it's not really being threatened, or at least in the same way that things that could knock out, I guess not Oricori or Dedenne, but Crobat are probably like going to knock it out anyways. So it seems pretty safe to me. I can't imagine you would ever attack with it, but it's not the worst attacker if you ever had to. But I'll be curious to see if it sticks around at all or if it was just kind of a little one-hit wonder from some of the Limitless guys. But I like it a lot, at least for the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when you compare the lists, it's a little bit of like, yeah, cut the Jirachis for Silvallies. I mean, to your point, like, it's nice to have a Jirachi in the active, but if you're just like straight drawing cards, pretty good. It's hard to imagine putting in another deck, though.
I'm not sure. Certainly, I suppose if you ever wanted to take Crushing Hammers out of your standard archetypes, like maybe it would have a place in a Dragapult deck or something like that. Like you could have, you know, I think the Dragapult Lycanroc deck suffers consistency issues and might be a way to solve that. I mean, you'd have to cut down on a lot of the combo package for Lycanroc, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I see a lot of those lists and the like Devolution Spray or whatever it's called. It just looks bad in the deck list to me. It just never seems like it's worth that sort of commitment. And maybe you could just meet in the middle and play Lycanroc in Crushing Hammers and then maybe devote some space elsewhere. But it's a lot of work to maybe salvage a tier 2 or tier 3 deck.
Fair enough. I feel like there was a lot of tweeting by the, as you described it, the like Cinescorch Twitter inner circle about how like Cinescorch players are like, you know, maligned and Cinescorch is treated like an unloved deck. Do you guys think that's true?
No, I just think they're vocal about whatever their opinion might be in the given week. So
Everybody wants to be the underdog.
All five of them are feeling downtrodden, then the percentage, or the perception rather, is that Cinescorch players as a whole are sort of downtrodden or looked down upon. And, you know, no, now Cinescorch is really, really good. We told you the whole time, you know. I sort of have had a joke in relation to this. I remember when Mikey posted his little spreadsheet with all the matchups and things like that. He mentioned Cinescorch specifically, that he didn't have enough personal experience piloting the deck to really speak on it. And my joke is just like, why bother? The five players on Twitter have all the data for you. You know, they're grinding the list, they're refining it, they're doing well and then poorly, you know, here and there. So it's just like I've just always felt like I've been privy to a lot of at least statistical information about Cinescorch that I don't have access to compared to some of the other archetypes. Strictly, they're just a vocal, dedicated player base. And we don't have you know, a group of loyalists that are as loud as the Cinescorch players. You know, there's not a group of people talking about LMZ and refining it down to like a science like they have. I mean, I know I saw today Cash just posted a screenshot of his deck and he had played 666 games with Cinescorch. So it's like, when you have that sorts of data, like, trust him. Like, you know, I believe the words he says when he says, like, maybe the Pikaron matchup isn't as bad as people say. Like, hey, trust the data, trust the science, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, maybe there was some sort of just community perception that just didn't take it seriously because it wasn't winning and it was only kind of a select few players. So much of the game is kind of predicated on that, just whatever the top players say. And, you know, obviously Azul's a great player, but if he wasn't grinding the deck like Cash and like Thomas have been, then maybe his opinion isn't quite as valid, just at least on the deck. I don't know, just the value of
hardware. I feel like the Eternatus players are the like overlooked minority, man. Like that, I feel like that's a deck that like seems to do okay. It gets no love ever.
I don't know. See, for me, like I feel like there's some truth to the way we've been characterizing the Cinescorch players. Like, they're laboring over something difficult, but they are making progress. Like, the Cinescorch lists really do look a lot different over time. But I wonder if that same sort of progress is possible for Eternatus. It just never looks, you know, it just has a lot more that seems to be necessary before you've got the poison package and whether or not you play that, but just doesn't seem like there's as much like wiggle room for creativity.
Well, I mean, step one, you know, only dark types, right?
Right. Yeah.
you're like, well, let's take 3/4 of all possible Pokemon we can put in this deck and just be like, well, we're never going to play those.
Yep. And there's just,
I mean, I guess Eternatus started out with like Nets, which we don't play at all anymore. So like there has been some refinement to it, but outside of the poison package, not a whole lot. It's just, do you want to play power plants? Do you want to play crushing hammers? Yes or no. Okay. Consistency, if not, is kind of just the way it seems to be built. And, you know, sometimes people seem to still hedge against Lucario, but I see Sableye less and less and less in lists now. I think they'll just take that loss. Sometimes you can win it anyways. Often Sableye not necessary, but yeah, maybe there just aren't as many dark Pokemon, or I guess people too at the start were toying around with Weavile and other dark guys in there too, and it's just not fast enough, not reliable enough. But yeah, I mean, maybe I'll just commit to the Silvally side and I'll just grind it out and maybe refine the list a bit more.
Britt's going to turn into one of these Cinescorch players.
Yeah. You definitely got to join the gang.
See, I'm still kind of flaky and wishy-washy. I don't think I'll ever be. I mean, unless I get like really, really busy in the game and like just really only have time to learn one deck and its matchups. It's so hard for me to make a decision. I change my deck list so many times for any given event, and I'll change it minutes before. And I've just always been that way, and am that way with most things, not just Pokemon, but just kind of life decisions in general. I'm kind of spontaneous, always looking for, you know, other options and things like that.
I mean, so you had said going into the team challenge, probably going to play Pikaron. Is your real concern that Cinescorch will suddenly seem like it's too good and you'd be like, well, we can't play that?
No, well, I mean, maybe that's part of it. I think I do have some sort of like psychological sort of things going on that underlie a lot of my decisions. But I actually practiced quite a lot last week leading up to this. Like, I don't know. You know, I know they're not a big deal, but I wanted to win one, you know, and it felt good just to do it, have the one and done. So I tested a lot. I played a lot of Pikaron. And I play a lot of Mad Party. That's what I worked on throughout the week. Mostly Mad Party. And I just never could get it. Even when I do think the deck is a lot better than when I spoke on it maybe a month or more
ago. A week ago.
And so I've gotten better with it. And it definitely gets better as you improve your sequencing. But it still just kind of has some issues that it's definitely good. But I just didn't want to risk it in such a small tournament. Some games you just draw the... And I wanted to go with something else. And then I was playing Pikaron, and my first game Saturday morning playtesting Pikaron, I played an Excadrill deck, and that just kind of scared me. And so that's why I chose something else. Like, small tournament. What if I get Colossal round one or something like that? It's just going to be a waste of time. So like, what's something that doesn't have like auto losses? And that deck just had two really good showings. It won on Wednesday, and then Vinny from Brazil won on Thursday, I think.
Yeah, it was definitely the deck making the rounds.
Right, and it just seemed it. So I scrambled. I had to trade for the Silvallis like at the last minute, and I actually played Vinny's list and not Pedro's list. I'm not sure what's best, but
what's the difference?
Vinny plays a second Fire Crystal and something else. He doesn't have 4/4 Senescorch or 4/3 Senescorch. So it's instead of just a V and something else. And I thought that felt right. Definitely the second Fire Crystal felt like a necessity for sure. I saw a list, I can't remember who it was, but floating around Twitter that was playing the Wondrous Labyrinth. So I wanted to try that as well.
Yeah, that was the deck that did well last night. I can't remember who was playing it. It was the best of the Senescorch lists at the Hexter.
Yeah, there's some wiggle room with it. I'm always kind of a little apprehensive about, I see this a lot with, or no, you see it in Mad Party, because in the Mad Party list, at least Daniel Altavia's, is it plays the one radar for and the only target is Dedenne. And I'm always a little apprehensive about that, like playing lots and lots of search cards for minimal targets. And so in the Savali deck, like I felt this in looking at the list as well as playing it, but the Cherish Balls are often excessive. There's not a lot you can do with the Cherish Balls. So I think you can play around with them. I wanted to try Great Balls. I think Great Balls might just be better, at least some of the time. But I definitely think you can cut a Cherish Ball. And I think that's where I was going to try to find like another Energy, a Mark Shadow, or the Wondrous Labyrinth, Prism Star. I'm not sure what else would be necessary. I'm trying to think of kind of whatever the main cards between the Senescorch Illuminati list and that one. And the only other really thing that comes to mind is Great Catcher, which seems very good. When in the games I've played with their list, I always really liked that card. So that's definitely a consideration for me as well. And again, like Mikey says, it's just how you play the matchups, which is something I just picked up through their Twitter threads, is that, you know, you want the Great Catcher so you could ignore the Boltons and only go after your three prizers. And that seems correct to me. So that might be the right card to put in.
It seems like it would have synergy with Silvally too, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, right. You could knock something
right out. Right, you bring your deck down to
draw you discard, or bring play your hand down, draw five, Hearth, yeah. Welder, game, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah, well, that's, I always thought the Electromagnetic Radar in the Mad Party list was super cutesy, because I was like, well, I assume half the time you just fail searching for the data. You're only playing it so you can discard cards, right?
Yeah. I've had games with it where you grab the second one, where you grab two Dedenne and just discard it in your deck a little when it's super late game and you're not going to want to, you know, your 10-ish cards left or something. Like you see your route to win the game and know that you're not going to need another one. I've done things like that, but otherwise it always feels a little wasteful. But I suppose you always need your outs.
Right, right. So the next thing I had put down was talking about the 2017 tournament that had happened recently. Mm-hmm. Xander won it with Espeon Garb. Do you guys have any hot takes on the 2017 format?
So there was one other more recent 2017 event as well that happened on Sunday. It was smaller than the other one, but Luke Morsa actually won it with kind of a new deck. It's which was really cool. I watched his stream on and off throughout the day. It was Zoroark, but like, not Zoroark GX, obviously. So it was Lycanroc GX, the gust up one, which didn't really see any play in that format, but he played that with, you know, Zoroark stand-in and the break, and he played a couple of Drampas and two Mewtwo Evos. And yeah, and he won that event. I watched him beat a bunch of, you know, Drampa Garbs. I mean, Lycanroc's just super, super strong, honestly. Like, you're one-shotting Drampas, you're does it do 110 or 130? I forget. I think it does 110, right? So I guess you're not one-shotting Garbs unless they play a rainbow, but you have Dangerous Rogue available. So that was really cool to watch. But yeah, I don't know. But otherwise, from the first tournament, it just seemed like a Garbodor fest. Like nothing else really did well except the two Garbodor decks.
I'm happy to see. It's not one that I've ever really thought of since rotation, since moving on, but I'm happy to see that it's kind of one of these more recent formats that people are talking about in really high regard, because at least for the ones that I've experienced, I do think that it is actually a pretty good format. A lot of diversity, a lot of close matchups, and consistency more than anything, though. There's lots of good draw. But just like my main interest in old decks is exactly what Luke Morse approved. I'm just so confident that there's lots of things we missed. And I saw his list, I think, before even round one started, and I was just like, yeah, that's going to be good. That's definitely going to be good. I think it would maybe struggle against Decidueye.
Yeah, probably.
But other than that, definitely I'm going to cherry pick a lot of those other decks. I was also happy to see Xander win the first one. He's sort of maybe my sort of paradigmatic player of Espeon Garb. He would always, and I don't remember it well enough, but I recall never liking the deck as much as a lot of other people, which at this point in time, I think I must just be wrong. It felt flippy to me. I felt, at least going into the Worlds format, I didn't like Espeon Garb at all because I thought the Gardevoir matchup just came down to your confusion flips, but maybe that's just good enough sometimes too. But I always thought the Zoroark Drampa deck had a really good Espeon Garb matchup, but Xander always really, I remember being in the Six Prizes group chat with him back then still, and he was always a really strong disagreement. I don't know how it's supposed to play out, but in my experience, which I really haven't touched the format since playing it, I just always thought the Zoroark deck was way favored. So I'd be curious to see how Xander navigates it. But seeing him win with it sort of just proved to me that, you know, when you know the deck, and it pulls off all that sorts of things. I guess I was a little disappointed not to see Cena win, because he sees a lot of success in this format. That's probably what I would have played if I had the cards. I need to figure out how to get older sets. I don't know if they're like worth more or less. I sort of assume it's just expensive to get older cards, more expensive than it is to get standard cards. But I actually haven't done too much research.
Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah, I don't even know. I'm not sure if Cena played in them at all. Did I play in the first one? I think I did. Maybe I did. I don't even remember if I played or not. What was this, like a week ago? I can't even remember. I think I did play and I didn't do well. And I don't even remember what I played. Because I didn't. I remember that NAICA played Decidueye Ninetales. And it did okay. Oh, I played Vespiquen. Yeah, that's right. I played Vespiquen last week. And it didn't go that well. I think I got Garbotoxin end. But it was like a Garbotoxin end to like five and just dead drew.
I just went back and looked at what my kids did at NAIC. I mean, they both played Espeon Garb, and they lost to Rainbow Road. They lost to a Mega Gardevoir, and they took four losses to Greninja. Yeah.
Jeez.
That matchup was really bad too. That's also why I didn't like it.
Both of them lost in top eight to Greninja. Like, Junior sucks, man. Where are these kids playing Greninja?
Britt, what did you play that NAIC? What did you play?
I did, yeah. I qualified for Worlds that year, and I had to do it with an NAIC performance. I went 6-3. I lost my winning end to Stefan, actually. But I played Decidueye Ninetales, and I played for Worlds. I don't actually remember if we played Ninetales at Worlds, but I remember I played Decidueye without Vileplume at Worlds too. But yeah, it was good. And I remember the series with Stefan very well because I got 2-0'd really, really fast. It was a mirror, but he had text for mirror and I did not. He beat me very, very badly, very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember how the rest of my games went, but I just really liked that deck. I like Ninetales, my favorite Pokemon, so I think I always try to play it when I can. I always have, at the very least. But yeah, I'm really blanking. Mikey, you were on... No, you wouldn't have been on Guardi. That was the next year, because Guardi comes out at Worlds, and then you were playing it sort of the following year against all the Zoroark
But it came, but it came out for Worlds, so I played it at Worlds.
Right, right.
Yeah, I made it through day one.
I guess that's a good question worth asking. So we've seems to have centralized around it's the Nats format that's the good one. And is it do you guys think that it's better than the Worlds one? Is the Worlds format the one where we should be having more old formats for, or is it they're both good? What do you guys think? I definitely think I have some thoughts, but it's not something I really considered until just now, because I'm trying to think, other than Gardevoir.
So I think the big culprit, yeah, so Gardevoir and Gliscor for Pokemon, but I think the big culprit for why people like NAIC better is Kuzma. Yeah, because, yeah, I mean, for lots of reasons, right? But like Lysander is just way more balanced.
I'm trying to think just balance-wise what Gardevoir really does to the creativity, and I think it does stifle it so much. There are decks, I think that it scares off the Zoroark deck. I don't think you can play that one really at all against Gardevoir. I'm trying to remember if it changed the meta. I guess Volcanion, because Ryan Sablehouse had top aided the NEIC with Volcanion, but I don't think it could really compete with Gardevoir either.
Correct, but the Ho-Oh deck was still unfavored versus Gardevoir, but at least it was slightly closer. But yeah, straight Volcanion was very, very bad against Gardy.
I don't even know what Ho-Oh deck you're talking about.
There was like a Japanese fire Ho-Oh deck. It was pretty much just...
Oh, was it the Kiawe? The Kiawe one? Yeah, Kiawe. Oh, okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have no recollection of this at all.
I have a very vivid memory of it because I was watching Sam Chen play his final round of Swiss, and it was winning into top eight. He was playing against one of the Japanese players with Ho-Oh Kiawe, and they split game one and game two. And then in game three, on the first turn, Sam goes Bridget, and Sam's playing Drampagard. Sam goes Bridget for Trubbish Lele. Like, plays Lele for Bridget, and then Bridget's for another Lele. And then you see the look on the Japanese player, like, oh, he figured out how to play the matchup. So that was really funny.
You always remember, it's always, I guess, part of my little fragmented Pokemon memories. You always remember what the Japanese bring to Worlds, because it's always a little different. Mm-hmm. And even, like I said, like, even if it's not part of what you remember, you get, like, what I experienced, where they played Garvantula and Shrine of Memories, things like that. They're always a little on the unique side. But it's really been a while since I guess we have Mega Audino, but for a long time, I think, especially in the game's earlier days, kind of the Japanese at least had a reputation for just like showing up with something broken. Like, obviously, the first world, they have Team Magma, which kind of couldn't really be touched, or at least in terms of how the event turned out, it had the best results by like a mile. But it's really been a long time where I feel like the Japanese, like a collective body of them, all brought the same deck and like did well with it. The only thing that really comes to mind for me beyond maybe the Magma stuff is that I remember, and this was kind of all when I was starting the game, so maybe my perception is wrong, but I remember that when, was that called? Supreme Victors? When Dragonite FB came out, no one in America really thought it was any good. But then the Japanese all have it at Worlds. And then the next year, your Luxtomp, all your SP decks all play Dragonite. And so I'm always really interested in moments like that. Mm-hmm. But nothing else really comes to mind. But it doesn't, there's just so many more players in general now. So I think it's just harder to track the trends and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What else is going on, guys? What are the next steps in the Pokemon Team Challenge stuff? Do you guys know? Have you guys gotten like special emails?
Not yet. I think they're still doing the qualifiers. I know my team right now, so we've had 3 out of 4 of my team's challenges. My team is me, Justin Bokari, and Will Jenkins. So we're feeling pretty good.
Seems like a good team.
It'd be a hard one to beat. I'm looking forward to it, but I'm sort of envisioning my experience as coaching like a t-ball team or something. Like, I'm just gonna be like, you play what you want, we're gonna have fun, we're gonna do your best. I guess
participation medals all around, people.
Not to speak too disparagingly on the game store that I qualified from, but I don't foresee my team being particularly competitive. But most of the people in the team challenge had a real deck, so that was maybe a little bit more than I was expecting.
Was this the first one of their cycle?
No, it was the second one. So I'm waiting on two more winners. But the person who won the first one has been messaging me just like, hey, would you play? If you ever want to get games in, like, hit me up. And I was like, oh yeah, definitely. I want to take practicing pretty seriously once we get closer to it. And I don't know. I guess we don't technically know the format. I can't imagine it will be anything interesting. But sometimes, like in Magic, when you have these team events, you have to juggle multiple formats and things like that. So I think there will be a metagame and a strategy to preparing your teams correctly. Like,
yeah,
when we did that, when Undaunted did the team challenge against the like Rats and Carps, Azul's little subgroup, we didn't end up doing anything, but I was early on, I was talking strategizing. I was like, we bring 7 Altaria decks.
Yeah.
So I'll be trying to cook up strategies like that.
I think
it'll be a little really more nuanced than just like, all right, everyone play Pika to your best ability and we'll hope to win 4 games or something. Like, because it's 4 people, right? So it's not like, I don't know how it'll go. I guess you'll all just play it once or something like that. I don't know what the rules will be, but I look forward to learning more.
Yeah, it's unclear. And something I was talking to Will a little bit about was like, are they going to ask us to bring different decks? Like, and if so, like, how do they enforce that? Because maybe, yeah, could all of us bring Pika Realm? I don't know the answer to that. That'll be interesting to see.
Mike will be concerned because he'll be like, well, only one person can play the best deck now. What are the rest of them going to do?
Yeah, right. Well, and it's funny because me and Bokari in particular, like Bokari is like known for playing a ton of Pika Realm too.
Right. Britt, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think next week the pod is basically going to be all Players Cup 3 all the time, right? Like people get their keys on the 21st?
Yeah. I think the 26th.
Oh, so it's 26? Like 2 weeks. Okay, so 2 weeks from now.
It's all right. Cup
3. No, it starts on a Monday. So,
okay.
So no, maybe that's right. Maybe the 26th is right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So today's the 13th. So next pod, we'll talk about prepping for giving the people what they want. Should we talk about this new VG players coaching TCG players in the video game and TCG players coaching VG players?
Yeah. I posted that. I wanted to talk about it just because I don't know what's going on with this. I feel like there's some bigger movement happening that maybe we are not privy to just quite yet. But yeah, there's some, it seems like a lot of streamers are getting paired up with big VGC people. Are the TCG people also getting coached in VGC?
I think so. I think there was something happening there. But okay. I think I just assumed that there was like Among Us where it was like trying to, you know, do like a shared sub kind of thing.
To me, it's just it's just for content creators. It's just I gotta make marketing a video today. What to do? We'll do this month. You know, it's just like, I don't think there's, it's a great idea. I would love for our communities to be a little close. We do always seem super separated, but I don't think there's any sort of like build towards anything. It just seems like kind of something for them to do. But I have noticed, which this, on the other hand, like actually had events and like built to a tournament. I think it's, I'm blanking on her last name, but Jen, she's a VGC organizer in New York. I saw Raul was involved with that sort of like a Pokemon VGC TCG, like League of Legends, like tournament. And so it'd be cool to see more stuff like that, like, you know, little subgroups of the marriage of our other interests and things like that. You just need to be proactive about it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What's interesting is I think like with content creators, because they have to create content, like if you say, hey, I want to organize this thing, a surprising amount of them are like, sure, I'll do that crazy thing.
Right. Because they're like, yeah, we got to do stuff.
Otherwise I'm just gonna be playing PTCG on today. More ladder people, let's go. But I did watch Azul coaching Yuri for a few minutes, and I thought it was I don't know how they picked it, but he was trying to teach him how to play LMZ, and I was like, man, that would not have been my first choice.
Well, on the
Go for the fire starter.
On the flip side, right before this, I saw Tord was coaching Wolf Glick, but on Excadrill control, and I was like, I also don't know if that would be.
Yeah, that's even worse. That's even worse.
Yeah.
So who do you think? Who do you think would be better? Like in kind of from a natural perspective, would a VGC player be more naturally inclined to adapt to the card game, or would it be the other way around? It'd be interesting to think. I know you have the Zhang brothers, both of them at one point in time were doing well at both games, and obviously mm-hmm. both of them are not just average, not just above average, but exceptional players at the video game. So I'd be interested to hear sort of what Aaron has to say about what it was like learning both, going back and forth, what sorts of intersections there were and where you had to, you know, learn to do something. I always have this bad habit. Obviously I play them very casually, but I get weaknesses wrong a lot for in the video game because of the card games, and like vice versa sometimes too. I remember back in the day too, back when Dragon, I guess they're all colorless now, they don't always have colorless weakness. And so I would always get that wrong and be like, oh no, it's a Blissey. They're going to kill my Rayquaza with their normal attack. Like I always do stuff like that. And I still, to this day.
Now that used to be like a big thing back in the day. I think they realized it's hard. So they fixed all that. Now they tell you like which ones are super effective. Like they've essentially taken memorizing all the typing out of the thing. You don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Just jump in and they'll tell you. It is an interesting question, though. Mike, do you have a perspective? I'm trying to think what the answer is there.
Yeah, I don't know. So I would guess that it's probably easier for a video game person to come to the trading card game. I don't really have a good reason why, but that's just kind of my first inclination.
See, I would think it would maybe be kind of analogous to the reasons that the video game always does better on Twitch, but isn't as big of a game. It's like, well, people know the video games, it's easier to watch. And so I would think that, because what's hard about the video game is not, I mean, obviously the battling is very, very hard, but I guess what's hard in terms of a barrier of entry is the breeding and things like that. So I think there's a lot of players who have no idea and are never going to learn that, but could hop into a VGC ranked game and just look at the team composition and be like, okay, like these two Pokemon aren't weak to anything, you know, at least have like a basic sort of guess at what's going on. Whereas say you're a really good video game player, but have just never ever dabbled in any card games. Like I think it would maybe be a little slower to pick up those mechanics, but I don't think either anything of what I've said leads us to a firm answer, but mm-hmm.
You know, it's weird. I always thought, like, obviously the breeding's a huge hassle. And I mean, when we were first picking up the game, I would tell people my impression of, like, the characterization of the difference between the video game and the card game. It's like the card game was a little bit of, like, first world problems because, like, you just straight up, you had to buy those cards, man. Like, bust out your checkbook and buy those cards. There's no alternative. Whereas, like, the video game, you know, getting good was just, like, you're going to just need a lot of time. Prepare to relax. Mm-hmm. And, you know, spend time on your bicycle. But having said that, I recognize, like, people, you know, little did I know about, like, hacking your DS and all that stuff. And, like, why spend all the time on your bicycle? You can just go program all the stats you need. And, like, there were issues there. But, like, obviously, like, the players who were inside there. But the thing that always made the video game seem hard, the two things. First, they didn't publish the information right initially, and they're correcting that now. But initially, like, you didn't know what the EVs of any of the Pokemon were because you didn't have to have that on your stat sheet when you, like, submitted your Pokemon in BG. So you would see the, like, winning, you know, deck, what do they call it, battle box. Right. But you couldn't just sit down and recreate that because if you didn't know what the EVs were, like, you were just kind of screwing around, you know?
Mm-hmm. So much of that too, it just doesn't exist. I'm sure depending on your level of soft cheating and things like that, it would be easier to track. But I remember, you know, I never played the VGC, but I played the competitive singles on the Smogon, like online ladders. I actually did that before I ever played the card game and I was pretty okay at it too. But I had notebooks. Like that's how I kept track of things. You had to write it all down and just count.
I always thought the second thing that always stood out to me about VG was you just the sheer amount of stuff you have to memorize.
So much of it too, I've heard, I would like to read more if there is anything on it, but I've heard kind of like horror stories of what like competitive, I guess, I don't know, VGC wouldn't be right, but what the playing official competitive tournaments of like red version and blue version and yellow version, I've heard like horror stories of what that was like, but I don't actually know what went into like raising Pokemon, but it just like took hours. It was really slow. Like you just, cause you can just switch and switch and switch. And I forget really what goes on in the early games, but like there's only a handful of Pokemon that are good. And like, I think psychic Pokemon are all a little too good, but there's lots of goofy ones, I think, but I would be curious to learn more about like, what is the state of like red, blue, yellow, or gold, silver, like competitive in 2020. I would think it has a pretty good scene. There's diehards for kind of anything nostalgic out there, anything competitive. So I would guess you could probably find a way to find tournaments.
But maybe they're doing throwback formats in VG as well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, people, VGC players definitely talk about formats the exact same way card game players do, but I'm not sure how many of them go back. So with the card game, there's a handful of people who have really been playing since the start, but doesn't seem to be anyone in the VGC. They'd have to be pretty old, I'm sure, that's been playing that competitively the whole time. It'd be curious
It's interesting because they kind of have to craft a format as they kind of rotate through, because there's not like new video games dropping every quarter like there's with the card game. Right. So they're like, we're going to let you play with this one now. Now we're going to take out these. Like there's actually a little more like active operation, you know, video games like Hearthstone or something like that, where they're like really involved in like designing how they want the format to look from kind of season to season.
Yeah. One of my favorite, like I played a decent amount of like casual competitive, like I played Smogon as well. And
yeah, that was our experience too.
One of my favorite things to do was play like Pokemon Stadium rental Pokemon. That format I think was always super fun to play. And like if you played against someone that didn't know what, you know, like just kind of like didn't really know what the good Pokemon were, they would get smoked every time.
I have absolutely no idea what that is.
Oh yeah, no, that was the best. I really enjoyed doing that too. So like in Pokemon Stadium, you could like import your Pokemon from your cartridges and things like that. But they were also like precons of not teams, but just Pokemon. And so you could pick an Electrode, but its stats and its moves and stuff like that were predetermined and you couldn't do anything about it. And so you could build your teams and play multiplayer or do the like single player content through it as well.
Pokemon Stadium is just the N64.
Yeah, you just have to like memorize tons and tons and tons of like know all the different things and how they work. And I'm sure for those you had to know the weaknesses and all that stuff. Like
they sort of do something similar now with like the codes and stuff like that you can just post the QR of your code and share it somehow, but I don't think you can do it competitively, but I've always sort of thought that was at least a potential solution to the barrier of entry for the video game, was to just do like rental teams, things like that, like, you know, not pre-con, but just like give players the ability just to like make the Pokemon they want. Like I don't understand what that would do. And I even offered the alternative, because there used to be in Yu-Gi-Oh, you used to be able to compete at the card game or the video game, and they were kind of annual versions of the video game that you compete with, like the same way we get sports games. And I've always sort of wondered if like maybe that wasn't a potential solution, like you could just like the VGC card or the VGC expansion pack or something like that, that is just like you wouldn't have to worry about, you wouldn't have to spend money on if you're just a casual player like me who wants to enjoy the story and or something like that. And but then something that makes competing easier, like I don't know if at the end of the day all you want is more seats, people at your tournament, I can see why you would hate it as a video game player.
I fear our pod is veering into like worst pod ever, because I think we're talking about stuff that we know like so little about. But I think you're right. I think they actually did solve all that. Like I think it's like rental codes now, and you can just like download any team and try it out, and it's like super easy. And maybe you can't use them in tournaments, but I think the idea is you can essentially like click and build any Pokemon you want now and just try like competitive teams. And then when you lock in the team, you have to breed it, but they made breeding much, much easier too. So my impression is all that stuff has been made super easy, which is like a little sad because for me as a Pokedad, like I felt like the one thing I contributed to my kids when they played the video game was like, I was happy to sit there at night and like push that bicycle, man. I could go online and find somebody who would trade me a five, you know, like a six IV Ditto with like all that stuff and sit on that bike. And my kids would be like, oh my God, Dad, you just totally changed the game for us. You're the best dad ever. We got good Pokemon now. It's crazy. All right, guys, next week, let's talk Players Cup strategy. Tell people what they got to do. I know we are like super dialed in for this Players Cup, more so than any Players Cup ever.
Yeah, we're winning. Me and Britt are both winning.
I hope to qualify.
winning. There's no alternative.
I mean, I'd like to win, but I'll save my winning luck for a real tournament, I think.
The Players Cup's as real as it gets right now. Yeah, and I have to agree with the people who say, like, you know, the online tournaments are kind of a thing, man. Like, I appreciate Mike's hot streak right now, man. We got to win what we can.
I would say that Mikey is the best, like, old school player that's by far that's seeing success online, which is, as an old school person myself, not quite as old as Mikey, but that's what we root for.
Although I saw Ross hopped in with Blounds again the other day.
Yeah, we were talking during the tournament. Yeah, he got top 16.
There you go. All right, guys. I'll see you next week.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
Pod in the books.
I got to go because I'm playing in this 2018 event that just started.
All right. What deck are you playing?
Guardy.
All right. Take it easy, guys.
See ya.
Later.
Bye.